to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 215. My name is John Morgan, flying solo this week in Las Vegas, Nevada. That is right. I am home on a Thursday afternoon, just chilling in the home office while everybody else is around the world covering things. Cold coffee is down in Rio de Janeiro. He's with Fernando Praches covering UFC 237. Matt Erickson has made a little journey from where he lives just outside of the Chicago area into Rosemont, Illinois, for Bellator 221. So we've got dueling events this weekend, and I am home. But no traveling for me. It works out all right, though. I to be honest with you, I'd love to be at every event, man. I'm an MMA junkie to the core. I'd be just happy being on the road every single week at every single event I can. But it worked out great. My son's birthday is Sunday, May the 12th. He's turning 7 years old, so I get to be in town for that. And on top of that, of course, May 12th. If you don't remember, at least in the United States, it's Mother's Day. So make sure you you get something nice for your mom. You get a phone call ready for her, whatever. But obviously my wife is a mom, so I get to be with her. And my own mom is actually coming to town. So we're making a big family deal out of it. It works out great. So while all those events are in the capable hands of our fellow staff members, I will be chilling at home and enjoying a little bit of family time. So it is what it is. I like I said, MMA junkie, but when you get those moments at home, you might as well enjoy it. Listen, last weekend, of course, before we get into what's going on this week, I just want to make a couple quick comments. UFC on ESPN Plus 9, another event that I hate to miss. I hate missing Cowboy Cerrone fight weeks. No hiding that. I'm a Cowboy Cerrone homer, always been one of my favorite fighters. And man, just seeing where he's at these days is phenomenal. Big, big win over Ally Quinta. And I got to say, the fight I'm interested in right now is Cowboy Cerrone versus Conor McGregor. I don't know if it's going to happen. I know, obviously, there's discussions about it, but there's a lot of hurdles to get through, both in the cage and out of the cage and in contracts and all those things. There's a lot going on there. So, you know, I don't know if it happens or not, but I would like to see that. That's the fight I want to see for Cowboy, especially knowing that's the fight he wants. I mean, listen, Cowboy's saying he deserves a title shot. Tough argument. I mean, if he's willing to sit around and wait for the winner of Khabib Nurmagomedov and Dustin Poirier, I would not have a problem with that. He's, you know, as hot as anybody in the division right now, and he's a fan favorite nearing the end of his career. You know, it's almost a Michael Bisping look, right? A guy that's towards the tail end and but has put in the career opportunity. Even if you don't feel like his current body of work is enough to call him the number one contender, I don't see how you can't look at his career and say, man, this guy, it's not like he's coming off losses and we're putting him in a title shot. I mean, this guy's hot. He's beating top contenders. And when you think about what he's done for his entire career, man, this guy deserves it. So I'd love to see Cowboy in a title opportunity. But I don't think he's going to want to sit around and wait for September to happen. And he's saying, look, the Conor McGregor fight would mean something to me. You know, it's not the big money fight that everybody paints it out to be, but it's still a fight that I'm interested in. And for that reason alone, I'm down for that fight. Of course, the build-up will be phenomenal. I mean, man, pairing those two guys against each other, the difference in fan bases, the difference in the way they approach pre-fight build-up, I mean, it would be an interesting spectacle, to say the least. But then getting in there, I think it would be a fun fight. And even though I think Cowboy, his ground game is continuously underrated, we know he likes to stand and bang. And that's exactly the type of fight that Conor McGregor wants coming back, right? I mean, if you're a Conor McGregor fan, I don't see why you'd want him to go against Khabib Nurmagomedov. I didn't see anything in that fight the first time around that makes me think it would go different the second time. And I don't think you want somebody that's going to be wrestling heavy. So, I mean, it does seem like the right fight to come back. I can't think of a better stylistic opponent for Conor McGregor to come back to that would have public interest as well. So, to me, it's the perfect fight for everybody involved. And it just it makes so much sense. I think you got to see it happen. Of course, again, a lot of things happening outside of the cage that will factor into whether that comes together or not. But just a fan of me, I'd love to see that fight come together. Now, the only wild card in there, Tony Ferguson, glad to hear that he is cleared, you know, that the personal issues that have been plaguing him have been put to the side and that he's ready to come back. And I don't know where you slot him next. I mean, I don't know, a Justin Gaethje fight would be awesome. I mean, anybody fighting Justin Gaethje is a phenomenal fight, right? I mean, I feel bad for Tony Ferguson because Tony Ferguson deserves a title fight, you know? And, I mean, Tony Ferguson versus Cowboy Cerrone wouldn't necessarily be a bad fight. It's not like a fight I wouldn't want to show up for. Of course it would be phenomenal, but, man, I almost feel like it's a disservice to both those guys. You know, I hate for either one of them to have to knock off the other. I feel like it'd be great for both of them to have their opportunity. And I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is there, you know. And again, I'm assuming that Khabib and Poirier will both be healthy and they'll get this thing done. I don't know. That's the wild card, because Tony Ferguson has also done everything that has ever been asked of him. I feel bad about the journey that he's had in the UFC, so he's got to fit in there somewhere. But, yeah, Cowboy Cerrone, man, guy just keeps getting better and better, man, and it's fun to watch. You know, I love the thing that he's always said in his career. You know, he's like, I just want to be the guy that when I fight, you know, people say, I got to find a way to watch it, you know, whether it's on UFC Fight Pass or ESPN Plus or Fuel TV or FX or Fox or pay-per-view or whatever. I got to find a way to go watch that fight. He's done that for me. That's for damn sure. A lot of interesting performances on that UFC on ESPN Plus 9 card, but of course there's a ton going on this week as well, so we don't spend too much time. Hopefully we'll get back to doing the and a half episodes in the very near future. This past weekend was once again unfortunately impossible with the schedule, just the way things were. Basically, bottom line is I got done working at like midnight and I had to be back on at 5 a.m. to work. I've worked the last couple Sundays, so it's just made it kind of impossible. But I'm trying to speak to the powers that be at MMA Junkie and try to get the little and a half episodes on the work schedule, so it's actually part of my actual workflow instead of just, you know, having to get all of my other work done first and then do that. So hopefully that'll be something we can work to in the very near future. I will say, by the way, also last weekend, hopefully you had a chance by now to catch the highlights. If you don't, make sure that you have caught the highlights for Bellator Europe 2 or Bellator Birmingham, as it was also known. Some incredible, incredible highlights here. Now, again, it started with a 15-fight prelim card or something like that, which is ridiculous. I mean, I'm glad they're getting European fighters these opportunities, but a lot of fights. But you had just an incredible, incredible main card at Bellator Europe 2. Raymond Daniels kicked it off. Of course, the vaunted kickboxer there had just one of the craziest KOs you'll ever seen. He's throwing a tornado kick, and he ends up pulling the kick back and doesn't throw it. So he ends up doing a 720. But then when he lands, since he didn't throw the kick, there's a little hesitation. He just fires off a right hand, and it KOs his opponent. In the first round, it was just one of the most phenomenal knockouts you'll ever see. Pedro Carvalho knocked out Derek Campos. That was an incredible performance. Fabian Edwards, we told you to watch out for him. He had a first-round knockout, and it stemmed from an upkick, basically, is what started the sequence. So Leon Edwards' brother there looked phenomenal. He looks every bit the prospect that people say he is. And then the main event, Brent Primus picks up a Gogo Plata in 80 seconds. How often do you see a Gogo Plata, period? And then to get it in a minute 20, pretty incredible. So an amazing main card for Bellator over there in Europe. The only problem I had with it was these Bellator Europe cards. And again, I get it. They're not really for us. There's a reason it's Bellator Europe. It's for Europe. It's for that market. But it was just kind of hard to watch. It wasn't hard to watch because it was on the app. It was easy to watch. The problem was nobody really made it clear where it was going to be. The times that they were giving out were wrong on press releases and things like that. And I don't know if that was because they planned on airing it via tape delay and they just gave us false times. But that was frustrating. You know, we were trying to provide live results, and, you know, the MMA Junkie staff, we had to shift things around because the schedule was off. So a little bit frustrating that it's not easier to watch those cards. And I get it. I understand it's mainly for the European market. But this main card especially was phenomenal. Highlight filled, and you know, it wasn't on DAZN, which would have made life easy there. I thought it was going to be on DAZN. No, it wasn't on the normal feed that they give us. They normally have like a little you know, we run the prelim feed every week, if you've ever noticed, on MMA Junkie. It wasn't run through that, but nobody really made that clear. It was only in the app, so it was just kind of a frustrating experience. And I get it, man. It's still a new thing for them, and they're trying to work it out. And you know, they're a small, you know, shoestring staff, man. They keep expenses tight over there at Bellator so that they can, you know, funnel as much money as they can towards talent as they try to compete with the UFC. But it was just a little bit frustrating. I don't mean to harp on it too much, but I just wanted to make those cards easier to watch. I know not everybody's going to, but man, when you have results like this, Maybe it'll encourage them to make things a little bit easier to watch. I did want to briefly mention the wrestling event on Monday as well. Beat the Streets, of course, capped off by Jordan Burroughs with a drubbing of Ben Askren, if you will. Tech fall 11-0, absolutely dominant. No offense whatsoever from Ben Askren. But just two things I wanted to say about this, and I know maybe not a ton of people care about traditional wrestling, but it was a big event for them. It's an annual thing that they do. But two things, and first is, don't be hard on Ben Askren. I know Ben Askren talks a lot of trash, so it is super easy to just pile on him. You saw Kamaru Usman come out now. If you're a fellow welterweight, pile on. Okay, you're in the UFC. You might have to fight the guy in a cage. He's probably taking shots at you. If he's called you Marty from Nebraska, okay, I'm not judging Kamaru Usman for piling on. Pile on. But for everybody else, don't pile on. It's not needed, to be honest with you. Ben knew what he was doing. I think, to be honest with you, this was pretty cool of him. I think he knew that it was pretty much an impossible mission that he was getting in there to try and accomplish, and yet still he volunteered to do it. I'll be honest, I don't know. I'm sure there's probably some money in appearance fee. So when I say volunteered, I imagine he worked out something. But I know it is a fundraiser, so I can't imagine he asked for much. But he did this, and he knew that he was in a world of trouble. I mean, to not have wrestled for as long as he has, and then to come in against one of America's all-time greats, multiple-time world champion, Olympic gold medalist, he knew what was up. He knew what the score was. And he was willing to do it anyway to try to bring some attention to this and try to make it for the better of the wrestling community. So for that, I say Ben Askren, kudos, and I hope other people, unless you're a UFC welterweight, won't be too hard on Ben Askren. And the other thing I want to say, Jordan Burroughs is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Truly just one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen. I had one chance to watch him up close. And that was back in 2015. They had the world championships, the wrestling world champions here in Las Vegas. And so USA Today asked me if I would go cover it just because I was here in Las Vegas. They didn't have anybody out here. And obviously they didn't, it's not a huge moneymaker. So they didn't want to send anybody out here. So they asked if I'd go cover it. And, I won't say I know, a ton about who's involved in wrestling and that sort of thing. I don't follow the wrestling community like somebody else might. But certainly love the sport, a huge part of mixed martial arts. And even though I didn't know, the majority of the names, it was an honor for me to go watch the sport. And Jordan Burroughs was there and did claim gold and was just absolutely phenomenal to watch. So the guy is the real deal. So further reason why there's no shame to Ben Askren, because Jordan Burroughs is legit. All right, let's talk about this weekend coming up. It's closing in quickly. It has been hectic today. As content has been pouring in from Brazil, pouring in from Chicago, continues to pour in as I sit down to record this. All kinds of content in MMA Junkie if you want to go over there and check out analysis and previews and everything of both cards. I want to start with Bellator 221 because I think there's a real argument that this card is better than than UFC 237. Now, when I say that, I mean only at the top of the bill, okay? I mean, anytime you look at a Bellator and a UFC card together, the UFC is always going to be better as a whole. There's just no question about it. I mean, Bellator's business model, they fill the prelims with local ticket sellers. And not that there's not some talents there. I mean, Michael Chandler was a local ticket seller at one point. There's other names that have kind of come through the Bellator system that started down low. They were just, a little one-off down on the bottom. Hell, Strikeforce used to find people like that too. So I'm not taking any shot at the people that are down at the bottom, but when you go through the card and you're saying, okay, here's 0-1 Jason Beliveau versus 0-0 Dave LaToria. And it's funny, it's randomly, that's the third fight from the bottom, okay? That's the third prelim of the night. Now, if I go over to UFC 237, the third fight of the night is Warley Owls versus Sergio Moraes, okay? I mean, there's a big difference there. Now, I'm not saying that every prelim is riveting at UFC 237 or any UFC card, but just saying, when you go through it as a whole, I think the UFC is always going to be a higher quality product top to bottom. But when you look at the featured fights, you look at the main and you look at the co-main. I mean, Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade, phenomenal fight. Jared Cannonier versus Anderson Silva, kind of a weird fight, right? I mean, a fight that I don't know anybody's clamoring for. I mean, I'm happy that Anderson Silva gets to fight down in Brazil in front of his home audience again. Jared Cannonier, I like Jared Cannonier, man. He's an interesting dude, but this fight, the fight itself doesn't do much for me, to be honest. It didn't seem like they were on any collision course. I don't understand really what the point of it is. I don't understand what the stakes of it are. So, you know, the co-main's a little head-scratcher to me. Now you go over to Bellator, Michael Chandler versus Patricio Ferry, the Pitbull brothers, of course, not big fans of Michael Chandler. There's real heat for this. On top of that, it's champ versus champ. Patricio moving up a division to try to take Michael Chandler's belt. It's basically said, I don't even care to defend it. I just want to move up, beat Michael Chandler's ass, and then I'll hang his belt on my mantelpiece and somebody else can fight. So a good main event. Now, Namajunas versus Andrade, that's a phenomenal fight as well. I mean, stylistically, it's incredible. Not heat. It doesn't have any heat. But, I mean, look, this isn't all about heat. We're just talking about quality of matchups. I mean, I think those are even. But then when you go down to the co-main, you say Douglas Lima versus Michael Venom Page. I mean, that to me blows away Anderson Silva versus Jared Cannonier. No disrespect to Anderson Silva, who still is one of the greatest MMA athletes of all times. Not disrespecting him, just saying the matchup itself. Michael Venom Page, the much-hyped prospect for so long. Now he's getting into it. Welterweight Grand Prix semifinal matchup. Quarterfinal, yeah, not great. That fight was definitely disappointing, but now Douglas Lima, we're talking about a real test here. MVP, is he for real? There is no more hiding. Now is when we find out. And you go down a little further, Pat Curran versus AJ McKee. Very, very, very similar situation here, right? AJ McKee, a guy, again, that I've been incredibly high on, man. I am on board the AJ McKee bandwagon and have been from, you know, 2-0. I think this guy's the real deal. He gets to prove it now, too. Pat Curran, okay? These are two. I love it. You know, yes, Bellator, just like, you know, Strikeforce maybe did before, they get accused sometimes of slow playing these prospects along. You know, that's a Scott Coker special right there. You know, kind of feed these guys, build them up. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with it. But I know MMA fans are more accustomed to a quick test, best fighting the best at all times, instead of the boxing matchup of kind of building people up, okay? But now we're getting it with both Michael Venom Page and AJ McKee. So I love these top three fights. Now, that's where you get interesting. See, it is bizarre, right? If Aldo Volkanovski was the co-main, and we're comparing apples to apples, I mean, we're looking co-main, I think Aldo versus Alexander Volkanovski should have been the co-main event. To me, it's just, I get it. You know, maybe it's just it's the respect of Anderson over Aldo, whatever the case may be. I don't know. I guess that makes sense. But they're both former champions. And, again, the Aldo-Volkanovski matchup, potentially a number one contender fight. So I don't know why that wasn't the co-main. I really feel like it should have been the co-main. And now, if we're just looking main and co-main, now maybe the edge, the needle goes back over to the UFC. I don't know. It's at least more even at that point. And again, once we kind of go down the list a little bit, I mean, Jake Hager versus TJ Jones, no disrespect there, but I think we all got our first look at TJ Jones earlier today, and I don't think anybody is impressed with the eye test. That doesn't mean that he can't come in and surprise us all on Saturday night. But I don't know, these key feature matchups, it's at least interesting. And then here's where it really gets interesting. UFC 237, you got to pay the pay-per-view price. You got to pay the $60. It's not on ESPN Plus. It's not on ESPN. Yes, the prelims are, but not the main card. You got to pay $60. And for Bellator 221, you don't. So I don't know, man. To me, I mean, I think you can make the argument either way. But this is a card where if we're talking about main card only, and especially if we're factoring in price, that you might say, man, I'm leaning towards Bellator this weekend. I think it's the better card, or at least the card that interests me more, at least the card that I'm going to be watching live, because, you know, I don't want to shell out my $60. So I find that intriguing. I do. Because I don't know that that's normally the case in a lot of the situations. But here I think it's a very, very valid argument. So. All right, let's speaking of McKee, there was a press conference today, and AJ McKee had quite a bit to say, as you would expect, as he always does. Patricio Ferri, not afraid to step in as well. You'll hear a little bit of his voice as well. But Matt Erickson was there recording everything at the press conference today, and I thought I'd include a little bit of that, especially just focused around AJ McKee. Chandler and Pitbull, I know you've heard plenty from those guys, man. The hype has been out there. I know you're there. Lima Page, I will say that fight has flown under the radar a little bit. I mean, Lima, not a trash talker by any stretch of the imagination, of course. MVP is admitted. It's been tough for him. He lost his father recently, and it's, you know, he's just kind of preferred to take a back seat lately in preparation for the fight. So that fight's probably flying under the radar a little bit, but not much hype around Pat Curran and AJ McKee. And I am, again, I'm waving the flag for AJ McKee. I'm on that bandwagon, and I'm excited that he is getting this really, really stiff test. And here's a little bit of what he had to say earlier today.
Over on the end, of course, AJ McKee, you're fighting Pat Curran. You feel as well that you can devastate and lay waste to everyone here, including Pitbull, including Pat Curran.
Yes, I feel like I'm just the new wave, the new generation of the sport. You know, I'm looking forward to going out there and fighting Pat. You know, that's the man that's stepping in front of me. That's the champion that's stepping in front of me. You know, he's the one with the accolades. He's the true champ that stepped up in this place. You know, so I appreciate the fight. Thank Pat for taking the fight, and look forward to going in there and doing what I do best.
But you've been quite vocal about the fact that you already believe you could beat the featherweight and the lightweight champions.
Oh yeah, it's just a matter of time. I'm gonna continue to do what I do best, and that's take one name out at a time. And right now, Pat Curran's on the list. Only reason why is because Patricio don't want to sign that contract. You got somebody 13-0 in my division knocking people out left and right. That's who I'm fighting. I've been calling his name since my first fight. So right now, Pat Curran's the man with the job.
AJ, you're 24. Am I on point with that?
Yes, sir.
24 years old, youngest guy on stage. So I have to ask, when did you first know about Pat Curran? Do you like remember the first fight you ever saw of Pat's and how old you were?
I've been watching Pat for years, man. Honestly, I've been watching a lot of these guys up here for years. So it's just an honor just to be up here and be able to compete with these guys at this level and set the bar. You know, that's what I'm always trying to do. I'm always trying to outdo everyone. So just stay prayed up and continue to do my best and put in the work. You know, everyone goes through trials and tribulations, but at the end of the day, it's how you come out of things.
You had another young gun in your training camp body shop, Aaron Pico. I recently read an article that Aaron Pico was leaving to go to Jackson Wink. Can you tell me, have you trained with him at all in this training camp of yours?
No, I have not. It is what it is, you know. Still my boy. We've always been friends since we were a kid, but at the end of the day, it's business. You got things you got to do. I'm going to continue to do what I got to do.
You had a little back and forth with Pitbull on the call, and that was pretty fun. You called him a weenie, and he actually responded with picking Pat Curran to beat you. What do you think about Pitbull's assessment of this fight, and where does all this emotion come between you two?
I told you, he wants Pat to do a job that he can't do, and that's why I said Pat's the true champ taking a real fight. So I thank Pat for that opportunity.
Is Pat Curran the toughest guy you've ever fought?
Hands down.
And Pitbull, last question's for you, my friend. You've competed against Pat Curran. You guys have had wars back and forth, very, very competitive fights. Can you speak on what your experience has been like against Pat Curran as a martial artist and how you see this actual matchup between McKee and Curran?
Curran was one of the best guys that I fought, and I believe he's gonna kill this motherfucker. You fought nobody, man. You fought nobody. Now you're gonna fight a really good guy. You will see.
You just don't wanna fight me.
AJ, if you are able to get past Pat Curran, a former champion as well, you had a fight scheduled with Emmanuel Sanchez. Of course, you guys had a little back and forth on Twitter and have that beef. Would you like to fight Emmanuel Sanchez?
I want my belt. I sign contracts and I show up to fight. If you pull out, that's not on me. That's on you. I fought with broken hands before. I signed that contract. I show up to fight. That's my job. So regardless what it is, hey, show up. Okay, bring it over here. First match of the tournament. I'll take you whenever, bro.
Come here.
It don't matter.
Come here now.
Bring me my belt.
What do you want?
Yeah. Anywhere.
Let's keep this thing going. Guys, listen, that's the reason why we're having our 16-man featherweight tournament later this year. So that's another time and another place.
All right, so there you have it, AJ McKee. He is young, he is talented, he is confident. It is interesting. Aaron Pico has kind of left that stable, so you know, I don't think any hard feelings there. But I think Aaron was just looking for some different looks and some opportunities to change some things up. But yeah, I mean, and I know, you know, anytime you lose a solid training partner like that, it does affect your preparation. But a big moment here, so. Yeah, I mean, listen, I think this is going to be a phenomenal card. I am looking forward to watching this. I think they're running pretty much simultaneously, so I don't know how much of it that I'll get to watch live, because I'm going to be assisting with the UFC 237 coverage, and then I'll probably have to watch Bellator 221 back. I might have another screen open on the side, but you know, when you're helping with one coverage, you definitely don't want to be too distracted. So. All right, listen, UFC 237, again, excited about this card. I love the title fight. I don't know if it's the type of fight that's going to sell big. You know, it's going to be a big pay-per-view hit. Of course, we're still in that an adjustment phase of people figuring out where to get the pay-per-view now that it's exclusively on ESPN+. I don't know if this would have been a huge seller anyway, but it's a phenomenal fight, man. Rose Namajunas, Jessica Andrade, two phenomenal fighters. And this is a fantastic fight. It's interesting. I'm intrigued by it. I'm intrigued by the mental side of it. You know, with Rose admitting, you know, some of her struggles over the years, but now here she is, you know, making the trip down to Brazil, going into hostile territory. So I dig that. I don't necessarily understand the Cannonier fight with Silva, but it is what it is. Aldo Volkanovski is class. And of course, there are some other fights that I'm interested in. Clay Guida versus BJ Penn standing out on the ESPN prelims. That's one that well, there's a lot to talk about there. There really is. But here's what I thought I would do. I thought this would be kind of fun. The good dudes at Submission Radio, our good friends Dennis and Casper down in Australia. We try to see them, of course, every time that we're down in Australia. They make the trip over here from time to time. But they had me on for a preview of UFC 237 on their latest episode of their podcast, which, if you're listening to this, I hope you listen to Submission Radio as well. If not, make sure you add it to your list, man. They do a great job. They get great guests. I think they're two sharp guys, man. I think their analysis is good. I think their understanding and passion for the sport is great. They cover their own, you know, they cover the scene from an Australian angle, but definitely not just limited to, you know, a point of view from that region, man. They really do cover the scene very, very well. So I love both those guys, and I thought it'd be an opportunity to, you know, rather than rehash what I said there, to kind of let them display their work here and kind of let them set me up a little bit, man. It was kind of fun. So I figured I'd share that audio here, kind of re-platform it, so to speak, because they had some great questions, and we talked about some great topics, and it was a good preview, and I was happy to be a part of it. And I figured, if you haven't listened to Submission Radio before, maybe here's a chance to get a little taste of them and maybe put, you know, another MMA podcast into your rotation. So here is my recent appearance with the crew at Submission Radio.
All right, guys, our next guest is the man in blue. You, of course, know him from his excellent work at MMAJunkie.com, kicking off every UFC press conference and the uncanny ability to always be equipped with a cold, frosty beverage. He is the Stone Cold Steve Austin of MMA, give me a hell yeah, and he'll actually be calling the fights at Cage Fury Fighting Championships on May 25th alongside CM Punk and Jessica I, if you can believe that. John Morgan himself, welcome back to Submission Radio. How are you today, man?
I'm good, man. I'll clarify. It is Jessica Penne. Jessica I is focused on her championship fight right now.
I am an idiot.
She's getting out doing any commentating. But no worries, man. No. I'm excited. You know, I appreciate you mentioning that, man. I'm actually really excited to kind of get back into the commentating world. It's something I really enjoy doing. I hadn't done for a couple years, and I'm excited about it, man.
It's great, man. You'll be calling the fights in UFC Fight Pass, and this is sort of, explain to us, is this a one-shot deal? Are you going to be calling multiple shows here?
Yeah, we're kind of figuring that out right now. CFSC, for people that are outside the United States might not know, it's a company that's been around for a long time, but it was based on the East Coast out in New Jersey. Of course, I'm here in Vegas, but they're coming out to California. They're starting to travel around a little bit. They're kind of ramping up a little bit. They kind of want to be one of these developmental leagues, kind of a primary destination to get people to that next level and get into the UFC. And so they're going to travel around a little bit. And by doing so, it kind of opens up some opportunities. I think they still have some local crew that they're going to use back in Jersey. But for this show, we're giving it a shot, and hopefully it'll be more things in the future.
Dude, I hope so, because you've done a great job with commentary in the past. But this is going to be fascinating, seeing you, obviously, and seeing Punk calling the action, and Jessica Penne, as I just learned. Why do you think he was chosen to be on the broadcast? I'm interested about that, and what are you expecting from him for CFFC?
Well, look, he's actually already done a couple shows for CFFC, so those are on Fight Pass, which I got, and he's done a good job, man. The guy goes in there, he does his homework. He knows the sport. I mean, I know people take shots at him for his fighting ability, but, you know, I didn't know anything about CM Punk before he joined the UFC, and I really, I've never seen a wrestling match of his. I don't know anything about him from that aspect of his world, but I can tell you that every time I've ever been around him, the guy is buttoned up, man. He's a professional. He's dedicated. He works hard, and I'm excited to work with him. I really am. He always struck me as a great guy, man. I understand why people take shots at him, and, you know, why did he get to the UFC when maybe he didn't deserve it, and there were other fighters that maybe deserve it. But I always thought his attitude was great about it. You know, he just said, listen, I'm not saying I'm going to be the greatest ever, but, I love the sport, and this is a dream of mine. And the fact that I have some popularity and some star power means that UFC President Dana White, they're giving me the opportunity to do this. And if somebody tells you can fight in the UFC and fulfill your dream, who would turn that down? So I'm excited. I'm excited to get together and work with them.
Yeah, I think he hit the nail on the head there. I mean, obviously, maybe he's not a pound-for-pound fighter, but this is a guy that could be doing a billion and one things, especially if you want to make a lot of money. And here he is. You can see his passion for MMA. He's putting in the work and really doing it as a passion project. So it's great to see you guys doing it all together. And I wonder if he'll be grabbing a beer with the great John Morgan after the thing. We'll have to find that out later. But look, let's look at UFC 237. And let's start off with Anderson Silva versus Jared Cannonier. We were all there. We all laughed in Melbourne when Israel Adesanya suggested this matchup for Silva. But wow, now here we are, and he's probably laughing at us. Ultimately, do you think the UFC made the right fight here? Is it safe to assume the UFC are sort of using Silva to build rising contenders, or do they believe that this could be a fight that, you know, Silva could win in Brazil?
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, Israel Adesanya is the man that you got to pick his head to find all that out. He has his finger on the matchmaking pulse, man. That was a great story, man. Adesanya suggested this fight, and we all kind of cracked up and said it's not going to happen, and then it happened. So bizarre. Listen, to me, it was a little bit out of left field, and that's why I think I laughed at it, you know, and no disrespect to Jared Cannonier or Anderson Silva for that matter. But, yeah, it's that question right there. What is the UFC trying to accomplish with Anderson Silva, especially fighting in Brazil? I mean, Jared Cannonier, a guy that came to the UFC as a heavyweight, man, and then he makes it down to light heavyweight. And I remember him saying, I can do middleweight. And we all just thought, man, are you serious? And then he came out. He just looked like an absolute monster at 185 pounds, man. He is a scary dude. So, you know, I don't think this is any kind of a gimme fight or a setup for Anderson Silva, even though he's fighting in Brazil. I'm picking Cannonier in this fight. So it is a little bit of a head-scratcher for me. I mean, the Brazilian audience, of course, man, this is the return of Anderson Silva for the first time, I believe, since the Bonner fight that he fought in Rio. I mean, to be fighting in Brazil. So, I think they'd love to have that, you know, welcome this grand champion home. But I think this is a tough test for him.
And just a funny Cannonier story. I remember UFC 230. I mean, like you said, he was moving down, doing the whole middleweight thing. And he had a new look. Like, he had a different hairstyle, and his facial hair looked a lot different. And I think when people thought of Cannonier, they thought of, like, the old school one with the shaved head, and he was a bit big. Man, I mean, and I'm honest when I say this, like 90% of the media didn't even know that was Cannonier until it hit media day, and he sat down. And I mean, you look at the guy on Instagram, like, this is not like a superstar kind of guy. Like, he's new to Instagram. He doesn't post too much. He's just like a nice, normal guy. What do you think fight week will be like for a guy like Cannonier, who kind of keeps to himself, Media didn't even know he was on this card until he stepped into media day at UFC 230, and now he's fighting a legend like Anderson Silva. What do you think that does to him?
I think, you know, he's a guy that's not going to get overwhelmed by the moment. I mean, obviously, he's got the military background. He was, you know, working in the FAA. I mean, he's been working in kind of high-pressure situations, and I don't think that the enormity of the moment is going to get to him. The other thing that I really like as well is John Crouch in his corner, man. John Crouch has seen everything and just has such a great understanding of everything that's in there. I was actually watching the countdown this morning and watched him, and I thought, man, that's dead on. You know, they talked about preparing for the way Anderson fights, you know, understanding that, look, he's going to try to make you seem silly. He's going to try to make you miss and feel dumb, and then he's going to capitalize on that, you know, and you have to be so patient. You know, I almost think about like Derek Brunson the other day with Les Theodore. I mean, yes, it wasn't the greatest fight of all time, but he fought the fight that he had to fight to deal with a very awkward opponent. And not that Anderson and Elias are doing the same things, but there are fighters that do things different than most people. And I think Jared Cannonier is going to be prepared for that. And that's why, to me, I think this moment is, you know, a tough one for Anderson. It's not just the athlete that's on the other side of the cage, which is a physical specimen. As you said, man, just looks completely different at 185 pounds. But I think he's going to be mentally ready for the challenge as well. So, listen, Anderson is capable of doing amazing things even at his advanced age, but this is a tough one.
I was watching the David Branch fight last night, actually, in preparation for this, and I still feel like Cannonier is he's athletically an absolute monster, but he's kind of a little bit raw. So I do feel like Anderson Silva has the opportunity to sort of take advantage. He has the skills. It's just whether he has the physical tools still to sort of, you know, get the job done. What do you think it says about Anderson Silva if he does lose to Jared Cannonier? I mean, we had Aaron Bronstedt on the show just before, and he did say that this is easily Anderson's lowest profile opponent in a very, very long time. But it just doesn't seem like Anderson Silva is going to be retiring anytime soon.
I would agree with that assessment. I'd agree with your assessment as well, too. I mean, that's the thing, such veteran savvy, you know what I mean? And the mental strength that Anderson has and the traps that he can set and the intelligence that he has the ability to do this. It's just, as you said, as if the physical tools are still there. I think a loss here would be devastating. I just don't think that a loss here means the end of his career, especially fighting in Brazil. I mean, this guy is on a different level. I mean, I think people around the world understand what a star Anderson Silva was. I mean, you know, that's why it is so special when Anderson, you know, travels to Australia or travels somewhere else, you know, to fight, because people are like, wow, that's Anderson Silva. And I think you can still get those. I mean, there's still emerging territories that you could put them on a card and say, look, man, that's Anderson Silva right there. And in Brazil, it's unbelievable. I mean, him and Nogueira, and of course Vitor as well, to a little bit lesser extent, but Anderson and Nogueira especially, they're on a totally different plane. So, you know, do I think that this could be the end of meaningful fights? Yeah, I mean, it could be. You know, I don't think that Anderson is going to be in championship contention, especially, man, the top of that division is nasty right now. But yeah, it is. I don't think it's, you know, we're looking at, hey, this could be his last fight. But it is going to have a big impact on how meaningful those fights are moving forward.
And I wonder with this ESPN deal, with them sort of wanting as many stars on these pay-per-views as possible, if Anderson Silva's one of these guys that they're hoping sort of gets people buying those pay-per-views. Quickly, before we talk about Aldo and Volkanovski, we have to mention BJ Penn, because he returns once again and faces Clay Guida. Now, aside from this, his decline in the cage, BJ has been surrounded by a lot of controversy lately, between the restraining order filed by his wife to the active investigation of him threatening a farmer with a machete. Why do you think the UFC even allowed this fight to go ahead? Do you think they should have, or they might have thought about pulling Penn from this one?
I mean, I think the UFC, you know, especially when you talk about Dana White and the old guard, I mean, they feel very much a sense of loyalty to BJ Penn. I mean, that's a relationship that's longstanding, and there's a lot of respect there, you know. You know, is it the right decision? I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish I was going to be in Rio just to have that opportunity to ask him and look him face to face and ask him, like, why are you doing this? I mean, I get it, man. It is hard to walk away from that spotlight, man. The feeling, the feeling of an arena as a journalist on fight night is fun. You know what I mean? But to be the center of all that and to think about that adrenaline and what it brings to you and the glory of that and testing yourself. And, you know, there's been, you know, if you read between the lines of some of those police reports and stuff, there's a lot of talk about, you know, and it's not anything that people haven't heard before, but that BJ needs that focus in his life to stay sober and to stay on the straight and narrow, you know, to have the truth of a fight coming. That's what it takes for him to stay focused and to stay clean. And so, you know, I think there's a sense of loyalty with the UFC. You know, do I think it's necessarily the best idea? I don't know, man. I was, you know, you get around BJ and it's crazy. I remember the Yair Rodriguez fight. I mean, they announced that and it's just like, oh my God, what are we doing here? And then you get around BJ and you're like, this guy's feeling it this weekend. He's here.
Contagious.
He's back, you know? He's just so infectious, man. It gets you believing it, you know. So, you know, we'll see. I hope he has a good performance. This is not an easy fight for him. I know it's another veteran. You know, fortunately, it's not a 23-year-old kid or anything like that. But, you know, this is a tough fight. And, you know, I hope BJ's doing it for the right reasons.
And Clay Guida has been fighting pretty decently lately. Who are you picking in this fight? I know, like, with Clay Guida, kind of like with Ryan Hall, kind of like with some of the other options, like, he's not the most devastating fighter, like with Yair Rodriguez and Frankie Edgar. Like, those were just tough to watch. But Guida's still fighting at a decent level. Do you think BJ can get it done, or do you think this is going to be another tough one to watch?
Yeah, I'm picking Guida in this. And you know, it was funny you mentioned that, because like you said, you know, Ryan Hall, I don't love the idea of BJ still fighting, but I understand that he's a man that can do what he wants to do, and he's paid his dues in the sport and deserves that respect. I like the Ryan Hall matchup because, you know, you knew there wasn't really a chance to come out and just clock him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think Clay Guida is going to come out and one-punch stop him either. But, you know, he could get on top of him, and he could grind him out, and he could keep a pace. You know, maybe he doesn't take the ground. Maybe he stays on the feet and peppers and moves. You know, yeah, it could be tough to watch. I think we'd all love to see and not cheer against Clay Guida because he's a great guy, man. Clay Guida's been around forever, and he deserves respect. But I think we just all love to see something good from BJ Penn. But I have to lean towards Clay Guida.
I just love how this fight is like hidden away on a card in Brazil in 2019. And this would have been, what, the main event like 10 years ago, even longer ago? So the crazy times. All the carpenters in Brazil will make their way out for that one.
I will say this, though. It is an interesting thing about, you know, we're kind of feeling this whole TV deal out in the U.S. now. But the way this is going to air in the U.S. is that, you know, the first fights will be on ESPN+. Plus. Guida and BJ Penn will kick off the ESPN portion. So that's the one that's on, you know, basic cable. You know, everybody has ESPN. Pretty much everybody has ESPN. I mean, who doesn't have cable? But, you know, it's interesting to think. I mean, that section, you know, I don't know what these pay-per-view sales are right now. Nobody does. I mean, so that section could get quite a few eyeballs on it.
I think you're right. I think a lot more people probably see that fight than the pay-per-view. I mean, who are we kidding? It's a decent pay-per-view, but it's not amazing by any means. Let's talk about this Aldo Volkanovski fight. Aldo's had success. He's won some fights, beating such tough guys as Stevens. But look, it looks like there's a bit of a changing of the guard. You know, Volkanovski's on a 15-fight win streak. You know, a lot of those fights that he's won in the UFC hasn't even been 100%. Here we're hearing that Aldo is having health problems going into this fight. Do you think he's got the skills to give Aldo problems, especially in a 3-round fight?
I really do. I've been super high on Volkanovski since he came to the UFC. He has impressed me not only with his fighting abilities, but just the whole package about him, his mental attitude, the way, you know, his jovial nature in interviews. I mean, I just love everything about Alexander Volkanovski. And I think he wins this fight. I really do. I think that Aldo, you know, if you look at the last two fights, which is what everybody's keen on, he's had some great results. But he's shown some deficiencies there as well. It hasn't like he's just been completely dominant either. And I do feel like Volkanovski is kind of that new generation. Now, Aldo's takedown defense has always been you know, impeccable. And Aldo in Brazil, it's like on another level, man. I'm telling you, the feelings of Jose Aldo walking to the cage in Rio, it is something special, man. He is a man of the people there. He is so beloved. And yes, I know that's just an intangible. We're talking about crowd noise. But, man, when you talk about, you know, getting that little shot of adrenaline, that little something extra that you're going to need, Aldo's going to have that readily available in this fight. And I think Aldo is still competing at a high level. It's not like, you know, I don't look at Aldo and say, oh, man, if only you could have seen the old Aldo, that guy could fight. You know what I mean? Like, no, Aldo's still competing at a high level. I just do believe that Volkanovski is ready for this test. I do believe he is kind of that next generation. And, you know, could be wrong here, but I do believe this is his big coming out party. If people aren't riding the Volkanovski bandwagon already, I think this is the moment they do it.
I think there's definitely some people on that train, on that bandwagon by now. And I feel like Aldo, it's almost like going Super Saiyan for him when he fights in you know, Rio. I feel like it's almost an unfair advantage. But I was going to say, if you had to break it down, what do you think Volkanovski's path to victory is here? Because I was looking at this matchup. You mentioned the takedown defense of Aldo. And Volkanovski does arguably some of his best work on the ground. If he can't get it down there to the ground, do you think he has a shot at sort of, you know, beating Aldo on the feet? Because we saw, obviously, he looked incredible against Chad Mendes, a guy that, you know, Aldo had some problems with and had some back and forths in the second fight.
I think he can have success. I mean, I think the whole key is that he's always got to be moving forward. I mean, yes, The takedown defense, I think he'll get a takedown or two. I think the other big key is that this is a 15-minute fight, not a 25-minute fight. So I think he's got to be relentless with his pace, and I think he's got to be moving forward at all times. If you miss a takedown, you got to reshoot. And if he stops that one, you got to reshoot. And you got to press it against the fence, and you got to be adjusting, and you got to be moving. And I think Volkanovski is capable of doing that for 15 minutes, no question. I think he could do it for 25, but knowing it's only for 15, I think that makes it, I don't want to say easier, but you know, you don't have that concern of, oh my gosh, I need to pace myself a little bit here in this first round. And so that's what I think he's got to do. I don't think if he sets up at kickboxing range and tries to duke it out there that he'll be successful there. I think that plays into exactly what Aldo wants. I think he has to understand, listen, his defense is fantastic. Don't get frustrated. Keep being relentless, moving forward. Keep reshooting. Keep making it dirty. Make it into an ugly type fight like that. And if he does that, I think he'll win.
And we mentioned the whole injury just before. I mean, how much of an X factor do you think Aldo's knee is here? Like, it's hard to tell with fighters. You know, they'll say something's not right, then everything's fine, then after the fight you find out, you know, that they only have one finger that works. So going into this one, I mean, Volkanovski needs to get a takedown, and Aldo may have a busted knee. Do you think this could be the X factor that gets him the win?
It definitely could be, man. You never know. Like you said, with any fighter, I feel like the Aldo camp's like notoriously kind of private about things like that as well. So.
And the Volkanovski camp, he's never.
Yeah.
I think he only fought once in the UFC healthy.
It's true. You never know. I mean, I try not to put too much stock into that because, as you said, everybody's banged up, man. I've seen, you know, guys at gyms on crutches a week out of a fight, and the next thing you know, I'm like, why is he not pulling out of that fight? What is happening here? You know, so nobody's ever 100%. I mean, Aldo can surprise you again. I think this is a very competitive fight. I just believe that, as Volkanovski says, man, I believe this is his time. You know, all respect in the world to Aldo, one of the greatest featherweights of all time, one of the greatest fighters of all time. Doing it in Brazil is going to be an even a greater challenge, but I just believe this is Volkanovski's moment to kind of step up to that next tier.
Man, if Volkanovski can get it done, if he can extend the streak, become a title contender, you got to think this would get him the next title shot. The things it would do for, you know, the recent, I guess, success of Australasia, obviously Robert Whittaker, Israel Adesanya, shit, we're claiming him, and he trains with Israel Adesanya these days. It would be absolutely massive for Aussie MMA. But with Jose Aldo, you know, he's been speaking a lot about going to boxing and sort of moving on from the UFC. He wants to fight out his contract by the end of the year. Do you think it really happens? I mean, this is something he's spoken about before, but at the same time, he's left that window open for, you know, look, we're open to anything, we're open to negotiations. Do you think he's dangling boxing out there as a public negotiating tool to sort of say to the UFC, hey, I have other interests? Because at the moment, when he talks about getting a title shot in his final UFC fight, I mean, it seems like an absolute pipe dream.
Yeah, it's weird. He kind of goes back and forth on it, right? Like, one, I just want to fight out my contract, but then I also want to be champion. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, if you walk away as champion, I mean, if you did, let's say you retire and you know, you wanted to go box, I'm sure the UFC would let you do that even if you were still under contract. But if you're a title holder, would they let you walk away from the title and go box? I don't think so. So it's kind of weird when you're balancing that out. You'd think if you really wanted to be free and clear, he'd want to stay away from the title and not have anything to do with that, because then it complicates the contractual issue. But that said, I do believe Jose in this situation, man. I wouldn't say that he doesn't. I don't think he loves this. I mean, obviously he's done it for a long time, and it's his competitive nature is there. It's provided for him and his family. But I think he's. I don't think he feels like, you know, some of these people that, oh, I got to be in the game, you know. Aldo doesn't speak English, but from all the times that I've been around him and all the times I've been down in Brazil, I mean, I get the feeling that, you know, all he really wants to do is just, you know, walk around in flip-flops with his shirt off and play FIFA and, you know, drink a coconut on the beach, man. I think that's the perfect life for Jose Aldo, right? I think he is. You know, I think he'd like to box is almost just a challenge, and it's almost something to stay fresh, you know what I mean, to kind of make it new again. So I don't think it's just a contractual discussion point, man. I think he really is ready to be done. But I just do caution. I do feel like he's a ways away from the featherweight title. But it does make me wonder, like, why in the hell would you want to win the featherweight title if you're trying to get away from the UFC?
Very interesting. But before we let you go, John, the main event, of course, has Jessica Andrade challenging Rose for the strawweight belt. Before we even talk about the matchup, what do you think about the UFC making this fight in Brazil and giving the challenger the hometown advantage? It's kind of rare that we see the champion going into enemy territory for a title defense, but even more so into Brazil, where there's been a billion controversies. It's so far away. It's like, you know, if you go fight a Canadian in Canada, it's one deal. When you're flying to Brazil to fight a Brazilian, and you're going up against that crowd, the judges, and everything in between, I mean, that's quite a big sort of difference.
It's a massive difference. And let's add one more caveat on top of that. It's Rose, who's been dealing with kind of like mental issues and things of that nature. And I'm not trying to question her. I mean, I understand what she went through was devastating, and not just in this, you know, the bus incident, but her whole life. I mean, she's admitted she's kind of fragile, I guess. But I mean, she's openly talked about it. You know what I mean? So like, for that champion of all champions to be the one that has to do this, like, yeah, I was shocked. I was really, really shocked at the assignment, to be honest with you. But I think that just goes to show you how much, you know, self-belief Rose does have at this point, and the people around her have at this point as well, that they believe that they can go down to Brazil, face all those things, as you said. I mean, once you get in the cage, I mean, you'll hear most fighters will tell you, I don't care how loud the crowd is. I can't hear the crowd anyway. All I can hear is my corner. And I believe that's true. But I can tell you, it is so loud down there. The crowd is just incredibly. I mean, Aldo Mendes, too, I remember, you know, there was a shot after the end of the first round that a lot of people said, oh, well, that changed the entire, you know, course of the fight. Dude, I was cage side. You couldn't hear the bell, man. Nobody could. It was not dirty. Like, it was so loud you couldn't hear it. And the other thing that I always think about, too, is you know, the loud chants, the Uvai Moreira, all that. You know, like, yeah, you're right. You only hear your corner. But, you know, what about when you're kind of rocked and you're wobbled and you know, you're dazed a little bit and you're trying to get your senses about you, and all you can hear is those chants and that screaming and that volume, like, my God, it's got to be tough. And you know Andrade is going to be coming out trying to rock you. So, yeah, man, tough, tough assignment. I was surprised it was announced. I think it's awesome, you know, that they're having a women's title fight in Brazil. I think that's phenomenal. I think it's cool that Rose is doing this. It's a tough assignment, man. There is a lot stacked against her, but – gosh, she's such a great champion. You think about what she went through in those two Joanna fights, man. Just the psychological, mental battle and warfare that those fights were, in addition to what they were in the cage. I mean, I think she's prepped for it, but man, it just seems like it brings a lot of X factors to the table.
I think stylistically, it's a fascinating matchup, because if you look at Rose's last two losses, it was against Carla Esparza, which feels like a million years ago, but she got out-grappled. And you got to think Andrade is, at this point, a better grappler than Carla Esparza. And then you look at the Karolina Kowalkiewicz loss, where she got outstruck, whereas Andrade destroyed Karolina. But Joanna beat Andrade, and Rose beat Joanna twice. So stylistically, it is a fascinating matchup. Who are you sort of leaning towards, and how do you see this fight potentially going, John?
Yeah, the MMA math is kind of bizarre in this one, right? You know, listen, I will say, and I almost feel bad saying this, because I feel like I'm doubting Rose when she's proved herself to us already twice, you know? But I'm leaning towards Andrade in this for kind of some of the reasons you say. You know, I think this might be a bad stylistic matchup for Rose. I mean, the one thing that does – I think if this gets done, it gets done on the ground for Rose, to be honest. I do not think Rose is going to outstrike Andrade. I might be wrong in thinking that. She is very technically precise, but, man, the power, the aggression of Andrade, I think that's a dangerous thing to play around with. I mean, Joanna can touch you up a couple times, and you can say, dang it, I got caught there. You know, now I got to move. No, Andrade, you do not want to get touched up a couple times. You make some mistakes, the fight's over. So I don't think she's going to want this to be a completely stand-up battle. And, of course, Andrade has those incredible takedowns, you know, incredible power on the ground as well. But I think Rose is really, really slick on the ground. And I think Jessica's going to have to be cautious of that. I think she's going to be very aware of positioning, make sure she doesn't get caught in scrambles. To me, that's where I think Rose's best opportunities are going to come, are going to be in transitional battles, you know, in moving. You know, I don't see her necessarily – Rose taking the fight down and dominating from top position. I don't see her outstriking over the course of five rounds. I think she's going to have to catch something in the transition. That's where I feel her best opportunity is. But I think it's a phenomenal fight. I think it's a close fight, but I'm leaning slightly towards Jessica Andrade in this one.
Wow. Well, let's just look at what's happening next. I mean, you got Tatiana Suarez facing off against Nina Ansaroff for UFC 238. Then there's also Michelle Waterson, who's you'd think a blockbuster superstar, and if UFC's trying to sort of push the division, she's a great sort of option to put up for a title shot because she's got so much of a following and you don't want her to lose and then miss out on that opportunity. So if Andrade is able to beat Reyes, do you see one of them getting the next title shot? Or do you think the UFC takes the opportunity to put Joanna in a title rematch against Andrade?
No, I don't think that fight's deserved right now. I mean, if anything, you'd see if Rose, you know, depending on how the fight went down. I think, look, you're right about Waterson. I mean, she gets clicks. She's a star. There's no question about it. But to me, you got to go with Tatiana. If Tatiana's victorious over Nina, I mean, what more can she do? You know, I mean, I think she has future champ written all over her. I think that have to be the play. I mean, Waterson is always going to be involved in big matchups. She's definitely a superstar. But I think Tatiana's the real deal. I think she will hold UFC gold at some point.
All right, so a big thank you to the boys at Submission Radio for having me on and for allowing me to repurpose that so we could play it here. I thought they did a good job of hosting some discussion. I figured why not play it here as well. I did want to say that since we taped that, you know, I mentioned that I wanted to, you know, have an opportunity to speak to BJ Penn. For the record, nobody at MMA Junkie got to speak with BJ Penn. We had requested an interview with BJ on Wednesday of Fight Week, and that was originally scheduled by the UFC, and BJ politely declined to attend that session, so that was canceled. And then at the media day, which was earlier today, BJ told the UFC PR team, who then passed it on to our staff down there, Fernando Praches and Ken Hathaway. Oh, who's that guy? Ken Hathaway. Fernando Praches and Cole Coffey. And listen, he wasn't going to be answering any questions from MMA Junkie. So, you know, not a lot you can do in that situation. It kind of actually set up a little bit of a discussion with our own team about the right way to handle it. I mean, the UFC PR team, for the record, will not stop you from going over and asking questions. I mean, you have the right to ask questions of anybody there. You're a credentialed media member, and he's an athlete attending a media session. But, you know, ultimately, Fernanda and Cole Coffey decided, look, I mean, he said he's not going to speak to us. That's been made clear already this week. Let's just move on. You know, we can try to address this at a later time. You know, I know he did speak to some other people, but reports on the ground are that he only spoke to people who agreed not to talk about anything outside of the fight. None of the pending legal investigation, none of the other stuff. So I don't know. Yeah, unfortunate situation. I don't blame. Listen, I make it clear. I don't blame BJ Penn for not wanting to talk to MMA Junkie. I get it, man. I mean, there's issue. You know, the things that we've reported on have been, you know, nothing's been wrong in our reporting. Nothing's been factually incorrect in our reporting, and so I don't believe that we've done anything improper in the way that we've covered these items of BJ Penn, but I understand why he wouldn't want to speak to us. I don't fault him for that. So, you know, I don't think that any of these athletes are required, so to say, to speak to us. I mean, we appreciate the access. And, of course, it's a two-way street, you know, that they're using our platform to promote their opportunities as well and to try to increase their own financial gain. But I understand why they wouldn't want to talk to us. So, you know, unfortunately, we've had to, you know, look at some of the things that I'm sure that BJ Penn doesn't enjoy speaking about or want to address, especially a couple days of a UFC appearance. So, yeah, anyway, you know, if BJ is able to win on Saturday night, then maybe we'll get to hear a little bit afterwards about kind of what he's been going through and where he's at right now and those sort of things. So, at least from MMA Junkie's perspective, we were not able to get any time with him. We did, however, get some time with Clay Guida. And, you know, as many big names as are on this card, I think they're all appearing everywhere. You're getting your big media blitz of interviews from everybody available. But our own Fernando Praches and Cole Coffey, who was working the camera, of course, got to sit down with Clay Guida. And, of course, I don't see how you don't love Clay Guida, man. The guy's been around doing it forever. High energy every time out. I mean, certainly, a legend of the sport in his own right, man. And I thought this interview was fun. I really did. He kind of lets us in on some history of kind of what this fight means. More to it, at least from his perspective, than I think anybody knew when it first got announced. And I just always like hearing from Clay Guida, man. I mean, certainly he's getting up there in age as well, but always brings it every time, and I'm a big fan of his. So this is Fernando Praches' interview with Clay Guida.
Kind of had to double check when I saw the fight, because it seemed like a fight that would have happened already in a way. You guys have been around for so long. So what was your reaction when you saw the name BJ Penn on that contract?
The opportunity to fight BJ Penn, you know, we jumped right at it. And we were on a crash course probably 10 years ago. This fight should have happened. Yeah. Had I, you know, eked out a decision against Diego Sanchez, maybe I would have gotten the nod against him when BJ was unstoppable at that time. He had just finished Sean Sherk. He beat Joe Stevenson. He, you know, manhandled Kenny Florian, and then he just dismantled Diego Sanchez for the title. So maybe it was a little bit early for us, you know what I mean? But so I think timing is everything in the sport. And the fans are going to get what they want, you know, whether it was 10 years ago or now. Come Saturday night, we're definitely going to impress the crowd. And BJ's no one to sleep on. He's always dangerous, and he comes ready to fight every time he steps in the cage.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's no secret to anyone that he's a bit of a rough stretch there. I think he lost 6 in a row. But I was reading up on the fight, and you said some, like, really nice things about him. And, like, you seem to be really excited, right? Were you honored at all to be fighting him, even at this stage?
Absolutely. Not only is, you know, BJ an icon, you know, in the lightweight division, but he helped pave the way for the landscape of mixed martial arts. You know, I think he's the only fighter to fight at 5 or 6 different weight classes, because I know he fought at 145, and I believe he fought at light heavyweight or heavyweight one time when he was against Machida or something. Yeah. So I think he fought 5 or 6 different weight classes, and the guy's got balls. You know what I mean? He'll get in there against anybody, anytime, anywhere, and he's always going to put on a show. He's always dangerous, so we're definitely not overlooking him, and we're bringing these guns. They're going to be blazing.
Is he one of those guys that you would point to as one of your, say, icons in the promotion?
Yeah, BJ's definitely one of the icons, one of my favorite fighters. But this one, there's a lot at home that a lot of people don't know about. His UFC debut was against my first fighting coach, Joey Gilbert, who was arguably the greatest wrestler in Illinois. He was the first 4-time state champ, and he put it on my coach, Joey. So I got to bring one back for Chicago, for the wrestling community, and for Gilbert Grappling. So there's a lot at stake back home, and yeah, we got a lot to prove in this one, just on that aspect.
Oh, so there is a little bit of a personal element to this one.
For sure.
Okay.
BJ knows, but it's all good. All good faith.
Yeah. And when they said, I think you guys might be the only fight that features no Brazilians, right? So when they announced, I think it might be, when they announced, when they told you Brazil, like, how did that factor in, if it factored in at all?
You know what? We didn't realize. It sounded like BJ chose to fight down here because it's been a dream of his forever. And yeah, Think of how many fights he's had. Apparently, he's never fought in Rio.
Yeah.
And just to think he was the first American Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion or world champion, which is incredible. So I'm surprised he's never fought down here. And I'm not going to make his first time down here a friendly invite.
And how do you look at that? I mean, I think you said he's not an opponent that you can sleep on. But I think because of his kid, everybody just is kind of like, at this point, maybe expecting him to lose. And then on the other hand, there is the kind of like, a desperate man is a dangerous man. Is that kind of how you're approaching that?
I think you're very right. Desperate man is a dangerous man. He's fought the who's who. He's got power in his hands. He's no one to take lightly on the ground. He's submitted the best of the best. So we're going to put the pace on him and bring the old Guida ground and pound.
How do you see it playing out? I mean, I think we know how you fight, but like, what is the plan for him specifically?
I've never been one for fight predictions, but just know we're going to leave the fans on their feet, and my hand's going to be raised high.
I mean, obviously with BJ, outside the cage, there's been some things going on and some things that came to light, some like disturbing allegations, and it ends up becoming part of the story of the fight. For you as an opponent, do you even pay attention to that at all, or is it something that you never even...
No, I push it to the side. It has nothing to do with me or my training camp, and I hope he's able to push that aside and just focus solely on the fight and what's important, because you know, that's all that matters right now in his camp, and I hope the best. We're praying for him and his family, and all the best to them, and pray for his health and a good fight.
You've been at Team Alpha Male for a while, right?
Yeah, so I think we're, still I think we're going on about camp. 4 years now.
Yeah, and you still did the full camp there.
Yep, absolutely. Awesome. It's the best camp, best gym in the world. Alpha midgets, I call them. A lot of people don't appreciate it, but the toughest little dudes on the planet.
And looking at your career, though, I mean, you're coming off a loss, Charles, but you were on a streak before that. And it's an interesting one when you think about BJ, because obviously he's not at his best, but he's a name. How do you assess your future? Do you think of what a win here will do for you? Or is it at this point of your career something that you're not even that concerned about me?
Yeah, you know what? Charles Oliveira, I give him all the credit. He caught me, no doubt. He was better than me that night. I embarrassed myself in front of my family, in front of my friends, in front of my city, Chicago, and I'm looking to make good on that down here in Brazil and get back to Chi-Town and put on another show for them sometime down the road. And he's been on a tear. Charles Oliveira has been submitting everybody since then, so it makes me not feel as bad about it. But as far as me and my training goes, I'm having more fun in this sport now than I ever have, and I'm improving on the smaller things. My coaching staff, at Team Alpha Male, and Joey Rodriguez and Chris Holdsworth and Uriah Faber, Danny Castile, they've all put the pieces together and helped me make huge gains to get to the skill level that I need to be in to continue to have success in the sport.
And speaking of which, you're both veterans, and people talk about how you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but you're just telling me that there are still things in your game that you're honing and things that you're learning. At this point, are there still things? Like, do you feel like you're still learning every day at the gym?
Well, I'm not an old dog, so I got a lot of new tricks coming. So as far as BJ, I'm not going to let him break his bag of tricks out.
And what about fighting? Like, you're coming over here all the way to Brazil, like, putting entire fight camps, like I said, you've been doing this for so long. Are you still excited about it? Like, is it still like going into fight week? Do you still like get amped up about it?
It's pretty funny. I just got done running down the beach this morning, and I came back to jump on the scale, and one of the cornermen and his student, they asked me, the coach goes, "Man, do you ever get tired of this shit?" I'm like, "Man, how could you? Look, we're down here in Brazil, we're on an island. We just got to run on a beach, you know what I mean? I'm gonna go eat, awesome Brazilian food. Like, how do you get tired of this stuff?" And I told him, like I tell everyone, once I'm done having fun, it's when I hang up the gloves and move on to bigger and better pastures.
What makes you not want to do that now? Like, what drives you every day? You're waking up and you're all sore and you're going through all of this again. What motivates you to just keep grinding?
Man, there's no choice. I don't want to go back to that life I had before of getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning to be forced to go to a cold job site in the Chicagoland area, or a 100 degree heat, humidity, in the, Midwest Illinois sun. You know what I mean? I get to do what I want. I get to train on my terms, and I get to compete on my terms, and there's nothing like that. It's the, we're so blessed in this life and so blessed in our career that I can't imagine any other way. I get to fish, pretty much whenever I want and train all day.
You said it, like, I'm not an old dog, and you're not, but I think you're reaching that fighter age where everybody just starts asking you about, not retiring, but like, are you thinking ahead? Like, are you already planning that out? And I'm going to be one of those people to ask you.
Okay.
How do you see just the next few years? Do you make that plan for yourself, or are you just really taking it one fight at a time? How does the future look in fighting look for you at this point?
I still think this sport is so premature that it's hard to put an age limit on retirement. If you look at the Randy Couture's, the Dan Henderson's, the Chuck Liddell's of the sport, look at GSP. There's scientists that have done studies that people always think your prime is in your mid to late 20s, but I've heard that prime for a male is in their mid 30s to maybe late 30s. So if you look at some of these guys, and if you look at the landscape of the champions in the UFC, I believe the average, I think most of the champs are all in their 30s. I think only one or two is in their 20s right now. So like I said, I'm improving every day, and I can't even spell retirement right now.
And speaking of champions, I think whenever I ask a fighter who's just coming out, like, what is your goal? Like, everybody's just very quick to answer the title or the belt. Like, that idea is just very clear in their heads. And when you talk to a fighter who has been around for so long and who has, like, kind of felt that the sport goes a little bit beyond that, maybe you get a different answer. So for you, do you still have that idea, like, I need to get to the title, or are you at this point just not as concerned maybe about that?
That's a very good question. I haven't tasted gold. I haven't touched gold since I was the inaugural lightweight Strikeforce champion back in 2006. it's a long time ago, you know what I mean? But I still wake up and yearn for that strap around my waist, because there was no better feeling than having that, you know what I mean? And I know I'm two or three fights away from being right back in that top five. And anyone who knows my fighting style knows that I can upset anybody on any given day. And I always believe that, you know, deep down in my heart. And fans, they might know I don't have the, you know, the highest skill level by any means, but I can come in there and I can bang with the best of them. So that gold, that title, that, you know, that strap is always in my sights.
And last thing for me, you touched on it a little bit, but when you see Saturday's fight like playing out in your head, how do you see it going down and how do you see it ending?
And I see an all-out scrap. Like BJ Soul Shirts used to say, just scrap. You're going to see an old dog, you're going to see a young kid with new tricks in there.
All right, so the Carpenter sharing a little insight on what's going on. I love to, because the other thing that didn't make sense to me was why this fight was taking place in Brazil. And there you get the answer that, at least from what Clay heard, BJ was the one who wanted to fight in Brazil. You know, it makes sense. He comes down and trains with Novo Niao, and, you know, of course, he's got the link to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, it makes sense. And, you know, from that perspective, I always thought it made sense. But what I didn't realize is that, you know, BJ apparently played a role in that and wanted to do that. So, listen, man, UFC 237, we mentioned the names, man. I am picking Andrade over Rose. I am. As I laid out there in the preview earlier, I'm picking Andrade over Rose, but I think this is a toss-up fight. Could be a rough night for Anderson Silva, could be a rough night for Jose Aldo. Thiago Alves, look at that. I mean, he's in there. You know, and he got that split decision last time out. But, whoo, I don't know, man. I love Thiago, but that fight with Max Griffin, I'm not sure. And so, you know, this is big for him. He wants to get that. Brazil versus Brazil there. Diego Fajeda versus Francisco Trinaldo. Of course, Diego Fajeda lives in Texas now, so therefore I gotta have his back, especially considering he comes up to our boys in Dallas, Texas, my hometown. He comes up to Fortis MMA to train with Safe Sode and those guys out there. So, you know, Brazil, Brazil there. But little Nog is back in action against Ryan Spann. That's dangerous. You know, some names here. You know, especially with Little Nog, with BJ Penn, with Anderson. I don't put Aldo quite in that boat right there, you know, but just some big names that, you know, are reaching the end of it. So this will be real interesting, because it's either gonna have a real good flow where that crowd is just gonna be going nuts, because they're these heroes of Brazil are racking up victories and the crowd's behind them. So it's either gonna be one of those insane feel good moments, and I'm telling you, when it's like that, that crowd in Brazil gets loud. Or it's going to be bad. It's going to be flat. It's going to have people going, oh, man, you know, we just saw our boy lose. So I'm kind of anxious to see how the ebbs and flows of this card really go. We'll see. I'm going to be flipping back and forth between these cards. I definitely am. And we'll see. It's going to be a busy night for the staff. All right, listen, earlier today I had a chance to get Stephen Thompson on the phone. If you're a long-time listener of the show, you'll know that the last time I interviewed him, I screwed up the audio. I was interviewing him while I was in Australia. It was his head of his last fight, and unfortunately, my audio got screwed up, and so I didn't get to do anything with it. So when I had a chance to get him on the phone today, I said, I got to do it. He's actually in his hometown of Greenville, South Carolina, running around doing all the media needed for the on sale. Tickets are going on sale for UFC on ESPN, ESPN Plus 12. Moicano versus the Korean Zombie. Of course, Hinata Moicano, Chan Song Jung in the headliner there in Greenville, South Carolina. And they're using Wonder Boy to go around and you know, do on sale media for a card that he wanted to headline. But of course he can't because of the knockout he suffered. So, unfortunate for him. But as you'll see, you can't ask for more of a positive, upbeat dude than Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Hey, this is Stephen Thompson. How are you?
I'm good, brother. How you doing, man?
Doing good, my friend. Doing good.
Awesome. This is still a good time for you?
Oh yeah, it's perfect.
Awesome. Well, let's just get into it, man. Give me an idea how you're feeling, man. This has got to be a little bit bittersweet, right? I mean, you're driving around town hyping up an event that we know you wanted to headline, and you can't be there. So what's this experience like for you?
Man, I mean, I'm just super stoked that, you know, the UFC is coming to my hometown. Of course, you know, obviously I wanted to be on this card. It would have just made it that much more sweeter. But you know what? Gotta take it slow. You know, after getting, you know, knocked out of the last fight against Anthony Pettis, you know, I just want to take it slow, make sure everything's right upstairs before I step back out in that octagon. You know, but you know what? I'm excited. I'm pumped. I'm doing social media tours today, just hyping it up, baby.
Hey, listen, man, I know you're a good dude that's always in a good mood, but was there any part of you that thought about saying no when they said, hey, man, we need your help, to just be like, nah, man, this hurts my feelings too much?
Not at all, man. As soon as I got the phone call, you know, I was like, of course, I want to be there. I want to have some part of, me and my dad have worked really hard to get the UFC to come to our hometown. Excuse me. But, you know, anything I can do to help make it that much, you know, more better whenever we guys, you know, having the UFC come to my hometown, getting people there, packing the place out, because I want the UFC to come back. And if they do, man, I would love to headline that card then. But right now, man, this is just for the people, because I got a lot of fans here in Greenville, South Carolina, who make the trips to Liverpool, who make the trips to Canada and you know, Vegas and New York City. And, you know, for once, I wanted to bring the UFC to them, and we made it happen.
That's awesome. What's the MMA scene like there, Steven? I mean, obviously I know you got your great school there and your fans, but I mean, is this an MMA hotbed? I mean, is the sport popular there? Is it going to be a packed house? What's the scene like there?
Oh yeah, man. I mean, even though I'm not on the card, it's definitely going to be a packed house. We got MMA shows going on literally every other weekend here. We got, you know, some really good promotions, lower class promotions. We got fighters from our gym, obviously, and some local gyms, but it is, man. It is definitely an MMA hotspot, which people don't really know about. You know, everybody thinks of Greenville, South Carolina, being just this retirement place for old people that come here and retire, and it's not true. You know, I mean, it's definitely growing and getting bigger every day. And I think UFC coming here is going to make it that much, you know, more popular.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, give us the update on you, man. You had that awesome social media post after your loss, where you were still in a great mood. I just wonder if you've had a chance to go analyze that fight yet and what you thought. I mean, you looked damn good in the fight, man, and then things changed on a dime. What do you take out of a fight like that?
Man, you know what? What I take from that is that you can't take anybody lightly. You never know what's going to happen, so you have to stay, you know, focused every step of the way in a fight, because anything can happen. This is why this sport is so dang, like, you know, exciting. You never know. Mm. I mean, I went back, I watched it probably about, like, a million times, and, you know, I was out there, I was crushing him. I was winning, I blooded his nose, I broke his nose, and all I remember, to be honest with you, is going back to my corner after that first round, I looked down at my chest, and I had all of his blood on me. And I looked across the octagon, I knew his nose was broken. So I was like, stepped up off the stool, and I thought to myself, I want to be a little more aggressive this round. And that's all I remember.
Crazy.
That is all I remember. I don't remember any of the second round. Yeah, man, it was crazy. But, hey, man, this is out of 80 fights, this is the first time I've ever been knocked out. So hopefully we'll go on another 80 fights before it happens again.
Yeah. I mean, that's a crazy stat. Man. I mean, with all the stand-up, you know, stand-up fights that you had before MMA, I mean, the first time to be knocked out, I mean, that's actually pretty damn impressive when you think about it. I mean, you mentioned the brain health and that you want to be careful and all that. I mean, does this change anything? I mean, being knocked out for the first time, does it mentally affect you at all? Does it change the way you think about the game, the way you fight?
Not at all, man. And to be honest with you, this right here has lit a fire in me more than anything else. You know, this is the first time I've ever been knocked out. It's like, man, wait, what's going on? You know, I'm literally the week after the fight, I was back in doing some studying, doing, you know, nothing really too extensive, but, you know, doing some back work, working some drills. Obviously, I haven't been doing any sparring or taking any contact, but man, I am itching at the bits to do it again, and it has definitely lit a fire in me. It hasn't changed me one bit mentally. knowing that, hey, you know, you cannot take anybody. Of course, I wasn't taking Anthony lightly at all, but you never know what to expect. So you got to make sure you're 100% prepared before you step out there. Anything can happen. So, which stinks, I did it pretty much in front of my hometown. That Nashville card was like sold out by everybody from Greenville. It was so many people from Greenville there in my hometown. Of course, it had to happen in front of them, but it is what it is, man. And, you know, I've always been a positive guy. Of course, my dad, when I was in the hospital, he's the one, it was his idea to put me on Facebook Live and chat, because everybody wanted to know how I was. You know, yep. There was a lot of people there, a lot of our students there, and they were wondering, you know, how I was doing. So, and to let everybody know, I was doing great, man. I was fine. I wasn't going to let this slow me down.
No doubt. It was a great message, man. I know it was well received. So, I mean, I guess what are the plans? I mean, you're itching to get back, but you don't want to do it too soon. I mean, do we see you before the end of this year? Is it, you know, late summer? Is it, do you wait till fall, winter? What's the early indication in your idea right now if everything plays out perfect?
Yeah, man, if everything plays out perfect, you'll definitely see me this year. Hopefully September, October. Hopefully they'll go back to Madison Square Garden. Would love to be on that show as well. Love fighting in front of my New York fans. So you will definitely see me this year, hopefully sooner than later, to make this happen. So, yeah, that's the plan.
Awesome, man. Well, one last thing for me. Let's get your – do you have any early leans on this main event in South Carolina, Moicano, the Korean Zombie? I mean, I know it's not your division, but these are exciting fighters, man. You got any early idea of what we're going to see?
Man, all I know is it's going to be a war, man. Moicano is a very, very very good striker. He's very well-rounded, but you can't take Korean Zombie lightly. I mean, you saw his last fight. He did get, I think he was knocked out by that reverse elbow, right?
Right, right.
But that was such a freak thing that would put anybody down.
Yep.
So Korean Zombie, he's looking for some redemption. So I'm going for my man, Korean Zombie.
I dig it. All right, man. Hey, listen, I know you're busy out there getting the UFC on board, so I appreciate you taking some time, man.
Anytime, brother. You have a good one.
All right, you too, bro. All right, so there you have it. Wonder Boy telling us that it's going to be sold out in South Carolina. We'll see. You know, usually when the UFC goes to a new market, they do pretty well. You know, not the biggest card by any stretch. It's, you know, it don't have any superstars on it, but that's a very, very fun matchup with Moicano and Chan Sung Jung. And, of course, anytime the UFC comes to a market for the first time, there's novelty, right? I mean, you've been waiting. You know, if you're an MMA fan, you've been waiting. And you don't know when it's going to come back. You know, you get, if it comes to your market every year, you know, okay, yeah, now you start picking and choosing a little bit. But when it's coming to your town for the first time ever, usually they're able to sell tickets pretty well. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see what, with Wonder Boy's help, if they can get sold out. So, all right, listen, getting underway here shortly is PFL. Of course, unfortunately, with the timing of when they do their cards, don't always get to say a whole lot about PFL because it's basically starting as we're recording or going on as we're recording. But that does get back underway. So that's on ESPN Plus and ESPN 2. So more MMA on ESPN. I like that. I like that. The more MMA that we can get on these channels, the better. So pay attention to PFL. I will say, I really enjoyed last season a lot more than I thought I would. Just seeing the standings, it did more to me than I thought it would. So Kayla Harrison is the main event tonight. Larissa Pacheco. Of course, by the time you hear this fight will be over, which is why I'm not going to spend too much on it. But I am intrigued by the fact that Kayla Harrison is getting a late notice replacement in Larissa Pacheco, much more experienced than the girl Kayla was supposed to be fighting. I do think Kayla should win this fight still. But being so early in her career, it is interesting to see how she deals with this. A more experienced foe, late notice replacement. I don't think it matters, especially when you consider her judo background. I mean, think about it. You go to a judo tournament, and it's kind of like a wrestling tournament, right? You have no idea who you're going to be competing against. You got to be ready for everybody. So for that reason, I don't think it's going to bother her as much as it might other people. I think she's used to just, you know, okay, who's next? Yeah, all right, let's go. So I don't think it's going to bother her that much, but cage fighting is different than judo tournament, so we'll see. All right, well, listen, also, I have got to step out tonight. I will be debuting on the mic tonight for Final Fight Championship at the Fight Dome here at the Rio in Las Vegas. Kind of been working on this in the background, and the debut is tonight. Myself, Frank Mir will be on the call, so I've got to head over there and get started. Five fight card tonight. Right now it's delayed to CBS Sports Network. is how it works. They're kind of working through all the details on that right now, but they're basically taping this. It's a mixed rules event, which is cool. It's an event that does MMA, boxing, and kickboxing all on the same card. Tonight it'll be mostly MMA, a couple local guys, a syndicate fighter, it's Extreme Couture fighter, and then kickboxing will be the main event. But yeah, Final Fight Championship, keep an eye on them. They're doing big things. I mean, they're hiring a guy like me, so you know they're doing big things. but no, I like what they're doing. I really do. It's this cool little venue over at the Rio, and they're scaling things up. I think by the end of this year, they'll be doing two events a month. And I just think it's a much needed organization here in Las Vegas. We've got Tough Enough as the premier amateur organization in the country, and people are coming here to kind of test their chops at the amateur level. But then once if you're training here, once you kind of get out of that amateur level and you start going pro, yeah, you got the UFC, but there was no kind of gap in between. I mean, so you had to leave town. So to have opportunities, every 2 weeks for local fighters here that are in these, plethora of amazing gyms that we have here in Las Vegas. And of course, traveling talent is coming in as well. I think it's a phenomenal opportunity. So I'm loving the fact that they're having me in. And I think there's going to be kind of a rotating crew of people calling the fights. But I know for the time being, it's going to be myself and Frank Mir. So I'm anxious for that. Frank and I have known each other for a long, long time, but we've never called a fight together before. So we've had a lot of conversations. We've had a lot of interviews. We've talked about fights. We've just talked about family. We've talked about everything else. I hope this will be the first time we get to sit down and call some fights. So I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, sorry we couldn't hear from Cole Coffey this week. He wanted me to send his apologies, but he basically told me he is getting his ass kicked in Brazil. He's had some internet issues and things of that nature. So he apologizes. Obviously he sends his regards, and him and I will be back together next week. So we'll look forward to that. And in the meantime, thanks for listening.